Smash cut.
A technique in film where one scene abruptly cuts to another without transition.
Much like a typical conversation with me and my friends when discussing film, television, music, video games, or anything else that happens to come up. This is the idea behind the show, Smash Cuts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Smash Cuts. I'm Rich Caban. With me is David Maldonado.
That's me.
And Jacqueline Kimmick.
Hello.
And this is Smash Cuts, which I think, you know, I listened to last week's show where we talked about Batman and Superman, and I feel like we only scratched the surface. Not that I'm saying let's dedicate this podcast to that, but...
This is no. Batman, Superman part two.
Yeah.
So it's going to be about as long as the movie.
I know. But,
it's a meaty movie, man. There's a lot that we could talk about. It's
I know.
There's a lot going on.
There's just so many aspects of it. Like, I keep going back. And, of course, by the time we record, I forget everything. But there was just, you know, I there's so many great YouTube videos where people are dissecting it and talking about it. And one main reaction, as much as everybody loves Batman, still the general consensus is they don't feel like they've seen something that looks like Batman, but this Batman, because it's almost like a Batman for the 21st century. You know, it's not your classic Batman. It's the fact that he's embraced killing, and that's the gist of him. And I think that's what everybody takes away from that Batman. And Superman is just kind of like, oh, the hell with him. Is he even in the movie? You know?
Right. It is pretty crazy, the reaction to Superman. It's disappointing only because, I grew up with the idea of, you know, Superman being a hero, and he hasn't been a hero in these past two movies. He's just been this guy, you know. It's like it's a guy in a Superman suit with really awesome powers. He does amazing things. He looks amazing when he's doing it.
Yeah.
I just wish he was doing it in a way that was heroic. I wish he was just like, you know, you get that feeling in your chest, like, oh, he's so awesome, Superman is awesome, instead of Superman whoops so much ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just not into that. I'm just old-fashioned, I guess, with that. But I just love Supes so much, and I don't want him to be just this weak-minded fool.
Yeah, they just made him somebody who doesn't know who he is, and I think that's the problem. Is like, he should be a pretty confident person. You know, that's always what divided Superman.
He's really struggling with his identity, which was kind of fine when he was the origin story was kind of fine with that. You know, like struggling to find out who he is, uncover his past. But once he's there, he should have arrived, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay like to see the arc, but he can't just stay.
It's
there.
Almost like they're making Superboy instead of Superman. You know what I mean? He's not a man. Mm-hmm. He's a boy.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, you know, but it's just frustrating because, you know, there's such potential. You know, I mean, we have the visual effects to make him look amazing. It's obvious. We just need the heart. The heart needs to be there, that Superman's heart. I mean, Batman is always going to be mysterious and mean and stuff, and he's got many layers, and he's complex. And I think, you know, Ben Affleck did bring the complexity to the role. He just worked with the material he had, and hopefully with this movie that supposedly he's helming, you know, he'll take that into a new direction. Yeah. And it's cool. I mean, it's great. It's a great surprise that he's, you know, he's rocking it. You know, he rocked it in that respect.
I mean, I think it helped that he was a fan. You know, the fact that he knew the material helps, because I think that's the problem, is a lot of these actors get into it. It's like, yeah, I read a comic or two, you know, but they don't really know what the story is, so to speak. So maybe that helped it a little bit.
And a lot, I think a lot of that too is, like you said, you read a comic or two and you can get those arcs, but when you grow up a fan, you get this whole cohesive look. Like, I don't even know what's going on in current Batman issues, but I still feel very confident in my connection with the character, and to know when something feels right about it or when something feels wrong about it, just because of how many decades, you know, I have been reading.
Yeah.
So, even when they, I just saw something about the dude who played Punisher in the Daredevil season 2, I guess, went into a comic shop one before filming and had a stack of Punisher comics that he was about to check out. And the comic book attendant was like, going to ring him up, and he's like, no. And he's like, I know who you are. You need this. You need this. You need this. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah, that's almost what you need. You need a consultant.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you need a guy to consult, like a comic guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's what Zack Snyder needed, definitely. You know, he needed somebody to come in and say, hey, you know, this is what's important and this is what's not important, so knock it off.
But what's interesting is that don't you think Zack Snyder has to be a comic book guy? I mean, he's like the comic book director aside from the Marvel movies. I mean, with 300 and Watchmen and now this, I mean, he has to have grown up loving them. He just has his own world that he lives in. You know?
Maybe he just doesn't.
I think he probably gets it on a visual sense, in a visual sense. Like, mm-hmm. he knows how to create imagery. You know, sure, there's been a lot said about how he, you know, structures his movies and how it's you know, crazy and a bit scattershot, and, you know, some stuff looks great, some stuff doesn't. But he is a really great visual stylist. He knows how to select a way to make things look really awesome. That's you know, hands down, he can do that. You know, in Watchmen, it's almost to the point where he's slowing the movie down so you can actually see the frames of the comic book, because there's such iconic imagery in the comic book. Where he lacks, absolutely lacks in, is really just the heart part of it, the undertones and the subtext and the everything that makes the stories resonate. I mean, and that's Richie said last time or the time before this, I forget, where it's like, maybe he should just consult on how the movie should look. Maybe he should be the visual stylist for the film, as opposed to being in charge of telling the story, because he can't obviously tell a cohesive story.
That guideline, though, because I think Watchmen is a better film only because he's not working from a brand new story. He's working from a constructed story. And I think the movie was better for it, but and he got the look perfectly, because the one thing I have to say with the movie, I had the same feeling I had when I first read the comic. There's that undertone of just kind of sadness and weird, you know, you feel kind of weird reading it. He was able to capture that. So I'm thinking maybe the problem is, too, that, you know, David Goyer needs to stay out of writing any more Batman movies, because he's written every single after Tim Burton. Actually, he may have even been involved in Batman and Robin, but he's been involved in every single Batman story from the beginning all the way through to this one. And I don't know why he's the go-to guy, you know. Because they always rewrite the hell out of this
Paul
stuff.
Dini?
Why
don't we get Paul Dini in?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why don't they? Yeah. Like, the way they treat Geoff Johns, you know, they treat him with such respect for Green Lantern and Flash and all that. Why don't they, you know, pick a Batman guy like that? Frank Miller's definitely not the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, because as much as I love Frank Miller, you know, you could tell when I read that Spawn Batman crossover, I was like, yeah, he doesn't get Batman at all, does he? When he had the way he had him talking in that. Not Frank Miller. I'm sorry. Was it Frank Miller who did this one? Or was it Todd McFarlane?
You mean Todd McFarlane?
Todd McFarlane. Yeah. Oh, I was like, wait, when did Frank Miller do that?
Why did I think Frank Miller? Oh, yeah.
Like,
you're
Frank Miller doesn't understand Batman. Were you crazy?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. No, get Frank Miller. What am I talking about?
I was thinking more of his movies lately, though. I mean, because I loved Sin City, but I didn't care for the adaptation of Sin City 2 as much, even though I still really enjoyed it. And same thing with The Spirit. So I don't think that he's the right person for Batman on movies. But not by himself. Maybe as a consultant. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely, on paper, I'll read anything. Whatever.
Well, speaking of something coming out, you know, I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for The Killing Joke that's been online.
I did.
Man,
we did see that, and that it got an R rating.
Yeah.
So that is very exciting. And I saw the little making of blurb about how they're kind of combining different art styles to try and make it animatable, but but still trying and
awesomely realistic as the comic book. Yeah.
The artwork
really nice.
I just never thought of it as, I mean, and maybe that's my own perspective, I never thought of it as being a dark story. Right? Did you guys? Killing Joke?
I mean, it grew up in New York, and we're surrounded by, you know, disgusting things happening all around us.
That's true.
But, you know, it is a pretty disturbing story, especially if you're used to, you know, just what it came out during a time where people still viewed comic books as, you know, a children's thing, and it's a pretty adult story. You know, the comic books have evolved, obviously, you know, with the people growing up and everything else, and, you know, everything becomes more mature and bloody and, you know, disturbing, because that's, you know, what we live in. But, you know, before that, it was, you know, escapism in a fantasy sense, where there's just kind of like, you know, just silly fun stories, you know, crazy gadgets and stuff. And this was like,
yeah, but even that had to be forced. I mean, originally there were no comic code, there's no association, right. So I mean, they got dark very quickly and had to kind of be reined back in. So this was like the balancing. This was kind of breaking back into that. You're absolutely right. It was breaking back into that. But I think it's really interesting them saying that they're gonna to make it longer, make it more like a feature length, and to have the viewer connect with Batgirl a little bit more. They're adding a story, kind of like a prequel, you know, on the front end of it, so that you can see Barbara in action a little bit more. And that way, if you're going into it blind, or, you know, even just like not in the mood, but like you just kind of turn it on, you're not just like, okay, well, I don't have as much emotional connection because I haven't just been binging, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true, because I remember when I had just gotten back into comics when I read that. Like, I had read Dark Knight, and then I picked that up, and I just remember I didn't know who Barbara was at first. Until like when it happens, until obviously then you see but then even then I didn't know, you know, I it's like I knew Barbara was Batgirl, but then I didn't know if she still was, you know, there was a lot of questions that I had, so it wasn't as clear to me. So yeah, that might help. I just hope they, you know, I think it looks good. I'm glad they got Kevin Conroy. I'm glad they got Mark Hamill. I think that's what was missing from Dark Knight Returns. You know, to not have those voices, because I like the Dark Knight Returns, but something about it has always been missing, and I think not having Kevin Conroy or Mark Hamill do those voices really made the difference. You know, I forgot who, I think it was like Bruce Greenwood or something like that, the guy who was in Star Trek, played Captain Pike, was Batman, and it's like, you know, it's like Kevin Conroy has the heart. He's lived this character.
What was the one where Ben? What was that? Okay, so in Gotham, Commissioner Gordon, what's his name? Ben McKenzie? Is that his name?
Yes.
Something like that, at least. I know he voiced Batman in something recently. It wasn't that one? Well, I guess it couldn't be, because he's so much older. And I just watched one of the animated things where he did it. Sorry, I'm trying to remember.
Because I'm trying to remember, too. There was somebody famous who did Commissioner Gordon. I can't think of who that was. Bryan Cranston didn't do Commissioner Gordon, did he? Or am I...
Oh, no, I always know that guy's face, but I never remember his name. He's older, he's got really dark, bushy eyebrows.
That's quite a picture.
Oh, man. Yeah, sorry, I'm not near a tablet or a computer to look things up on IMDb. But...
That's funny.
But yeah, no, there's good people. But yeah, the guy who played Commissioner Gordon in Gotham has definitely voiced Bruce in something, but I forget. Okay. Yeah, but I forget which animated film it was.
That's the only thing I hate. I hate that they keep recasting Batman in all these animated ones. I like all of them. Just choose one Batman and go with it. Like, I don't understand the recasting thing. You know, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
By the way, I hope everybody liked the first Avatar enough for what's about to be leashed.
To get
on us.
Six more.
Oh my god.
What is this?
It's like, it's been so far along that Avatar came out.
Oh my god. He's really gotta know, like, how can you say that you're gonna keep adding more and more sequels on when you haven't even gotten a successful second one out? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
that just speaks to his arrogance.
This one was amazing, but that's what I'm saying. Like, this guy has to just be like,
I got enough ideas for
a pile of scripts. Yeah. I don't understand.
Well, that's how he used to be with this one. Remember, because he kept holding on to it, and I mean it worked. The first one worked. It's just I just don't know how much of the story I need to see. You know what I mean?
I think the reason that he's going to be doing it is because he made the commitment to the theme park. And he wants to keep the theme park relevant, right? And keep it alive, even though who knows what development hell that's in. I have no idea what the progress is in making all the plants blue.
Next year. I think you saw
next year, wow.
Next year, really?
Well, I think that's really the main thing, though, is he's like, okay, well, we're going to have to keep this, and this can't be... We can't have a theme park for a movie that only has a successful couple movies, you know? Like, so I think that's probably what he's really... trying for, just longevity, so that people keep going.
Where's the theme park going to be?
I don't know.
I read something about Orlando, the last
thing.
Yeah,
I thought it was in Florida, but I didn't know where in Florida.
But, I mean, is it going to be one of the, like, is he making an Avatar theme park on its own, or is he...
it's going to be part of some other, I thought it was going to be part of either, did I read Disney or Universal? I literally just read it a little while ago.
Funny.
I thought it was its own separate thing. That's why I thought he was like... if people are going to pay to go do that separately, they've got to really make it big. But, I mean, if it's part of Universal or something,
it's going to be part of that Bible one. What's that?
Holy Land?
Holy Land, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, you guys. For anybody who doesn't know, like, right down the road from the other theme parks, like Disney and Universal, there is Holy Land.
That's right.
And certain days are free, and you can go and see, like, Jesus walking around. Yep. And I've never gone, and I've always been fascinated by it. And I'm just like, we got to go to Holy Land one day.
I think Bill Maher goes there in Religious, that movie Religious.
Oh, yes, he does.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Yeah, and he even interviews the guy who plays Jesus and stuff.
Yeah, I want to go to the Moses Wave Pool and the Crucifixion Log Flume.
I just joked my mom about that. But like, we instead of Mickey ears, you get like, you know, crowns of thorns and stuff.
Terrible.
Really offensive, and I'm sorry to all you.
I'm sorry if we're offending anyone, but
I also like the idea.
Fascinated.
I like the idea of going to the gift shop, and every once in a while, Jesus comes in and throws everything around, and because you know, like that scene in the Bible when he claims everybody, and then he says, "Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I'll be taking pictures over here after he's done."
What scene in the Bible where he throws things around? What?
When Jesus runs and goes into the temple because they're all everybody's selling their wares inside of the church.
Oh.
And he goes.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know that.
Freaks out and turns the tables and yeah.
Oh.
That's my favorite. That'll be
a little drama
part.
Queen. Okay, got it.
A little drama queen.
In my house.
Yeah. In my house.
That's interesting. All right, cool. Well, again, I. No, absolutely no offense to religion in general. It's just the theme park aspect of it is so fascinating to me. I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah.
But anyway, more movies. So I went and saw Zootopia. Speaking of children's theme parks and stuff like that. And wow, what a great theme park that would be, where it's got this whole city of animals, but it's in like different quadrants, right? You've got like the little Sahara land, you've got the rainforest zone, you've got the tundra, the frozen wasteland kind of zone, and then you've got this really awesome metropolis-like city. And it was great. I thought it had a great message. I loved the characters. I didn't really know who was voicing anything going into it, so I always love kind of being like, oh, that's, you know, that's got to be Jason Bateman, you know, and oh, that's got to be Idris Elba. Although I have to say, I did not recognize Jennifer Goodwin's voice until the end. I had to stay for the credits and be like, who the hell was the main bunny? Like,
yeah, because she kind of sounded like Amy Poehler to me a little bit. Like, she had that Amy Poehler vibe.
Yeah, I like her, but I don't know if her voice just didn't have enough standalone character for me to pick it out. And not that she has a bad voice. She had a lovely voice. But I just didn't I couldn't make that connection.
But I love the look of it. You know, we took Xavier to see that, and I think the film for a younger crowd is not exactly. I mean, he was interested to a point. I don't think it held his attention like a Minions, because you know it was a little dark in some places.
Yeah.
And
it definitely felt like a real movie, like a regular movie.
It was like
as much a children's movie.
Yeah, definitely, and it was also like a buddy cop movie and horror aspects. Mm-hmm. But the one funny thing, and I don't mind message movies at all. You know, I thought and I liked all the messages. I thought these messages were more coherent than Happy Feet. You know, because Happy Feet was like, you know, pick a lane. But I was really surprised at what they got away with, you know, with some of the things that they were talking about in Zootopia. I mean, you deal with racism, you're dealing with sexism, you know. I mean, that's just two, and I know there's more than that just in that film. And profiling, you know. I mean, they get into so many so many detailed things, but it's such a great movie, like great story.
But how important, you know? Like, I mean, how great to have a movie like that to show your kids, you know, and for them to grow up with, so it's not such a taboo conversation to have, you know. I mean, that's really the way that you breed out racism, right? Just every generation moving forward is a little less racist than the previous one, because we learn more and we try and teach more. And like, I know my family is very loving and open, but I know that inherently, you know, the oldest generation in my family is a little more racist than I would like to admit. And even my mom is, I would never call her a racist, but sometimes she'll say things where I'm like, Mom, you can't say that. What I mean? Like, that's not, I know you don't mean it that way, but just the fact that you're saying it that way is perpetuating a stereotype or anything like that. And even myself, I'm sure if I ever have kids, you know, like, those instant thoughts that you have that you can't even help having, where you're like, oh, this is dangerous, and you're like, why did I just say this is a dangerous situation? Like, nothing's making it dangerous except my own preconceived notions, you know. Right. And even though I process that quickly, it still can be there as an instant feeling. And so
I was just surprised that nobody's jumped on this.
I'm excited to see people addressing it.
Usually Fox News or somebody would be all over something like this, and I'm like, wow. Everybody's been kind of, you know, no one said anything about this movie, which it is a great movie. I don't know. Dave, did you get to see it at all? Or
no, I really want to. I really want to see it, and maybe I'll try and check it out this weekend. I love, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, Disney's work and stuff, obviously, and they do, I mean, it looks like a really cool-looking movie visually, and they've been knocking it out of the park as far as, like, storytelling and all that other stuff, too. So I definitely am all about it. I just haven't had a chance to. I really want to see. There's a bunch I want to see, but
I mean,
that one
is the closest they come to a Pixar movie. I felt like that. This is, you know, this is them on their own, almost finally getting to that level. That because the, I mean, it is a beautiful looking, probably the most beautiful film they've ever produced, in terms of from their digital department. You know, it's just everything.
It is
just
really
so
good,
interesting. So
it is the look is amazing. All the fur. I always. Fascinated with fur and hairs and textures of clothing and fibers in digital films, and I mean, this definitely does not disappoint. It was actually, you know, there's a couple things about this one that was interesting. You know how they always have like 713 hidden in all their movies?
The other room.
Because that was the artist's room, you know, that they all had to go to school at or whatever it was. This was the first movie where that, like, jumped out at me on my first viewing. I was just like, oh, well, there's that.
Like, where was it? I don't think I didn't even know anything about it,
And it's not a spoiler, you know, I mean, it's just something fun to look at. It doesn't ruin the movie at all. But when Judy is going to Zootopia and she's on her little train car, it's like a yellow monorail kind of thing.
Okay.
The train cars themselves are numbered, but number 7 and number 13 are right next to each other, and I'm like, that makes no sense. Oh,
that's funny.
I was like, why would train car 7 and 13 be next to each other? And I was like, oh, that's that room. That's right. So that was just because it was two separate cars. I was just like, my anal OCD nature is like, that is absolutely wrong. What cars are in for service?
That's funny.
Who put the train together that way? I don't know if you guys saw it or Rich, if you saw it on AMC, but they're really pushing see 5 movies this year from now until September and get like a $5 reward on your AMC Stubs card or something
that.
Really? Because the chick who sold me the ticket told me about it, and then I swear like every other commercial in there was a Disney movie and it said that same thing, and I'm like, okay, Disney, I'll go spend $100 to get 5 back from you. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
Like, what? But the Jungle Book looks great. You know, I know that there's some other things coming up. They all look great. I mean, like, I'll go see some of them. But
you know, it's funny. On that same note, I go to now I forgot the name of the theater. It's not an AMC theater. I just blanked on it. But they have something called Cinema Mode, where if you download the app and you switch it to Cinema Mode, it blocks all of your notifications and everything. And as long as you leave it on during the duration of the movie, it'll give you points to use at the concession stand or towards a movie ticket and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so sometimes I'm able to earn points just by doing that. But
that's really cool. You know, that brings up another article I just saw before mm-hmm. we hopped on. It might have been AMC. One of the giant movie theater AMC. Chains said that they're considering allowing texting, in theaters, which is
well, what's dumb is
crazy.
It's going to be a designated auditorium for texting. It's like, well, what's the point of that? Why don't you just put a phone in there, too?
Yeah.
And a little TV in an office, you know? I mean,
you can only,
why show a movie? Just leave the lights on. Just let everybody go in there and text.
And then what movie would they be playing? Like, this is the movie only texters want to see. You know what I mean? Like, what if it's only one auditorium? I don't know. That seems like a slippery slope to offer.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was going to be its own separate theater. I thought maybe it would be like a section like everybody
either.
In back or something.
Yeah, no, they were saying a theater so they can make it a more interactive thing so that people will text and Facebook.
Oh, hashtag I'm at the movies, yeah.
Yeah. But how are you going to enjoy a movie if you're too busy saying, oh, the part when this just happened, I just experienced this, hashtag I experienced it. You know, like, what are you going to spend your whole day texting?
Unless they want to do, like a choose-your-own-adventure polling, you know what I mean? Like, where,
I know.
Where okay, if you want to see this person go in room number 3, you know, text this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, don't give them any ideas.
No, that would be horrible. No.
You know what's funny is, Dave, did you get to see Hardcore Harry? Henry?
No, I'm dying.
Harry. I keep saying Harry.
Harry.
No, I have not. I want to. I really, really want to. Just because it's something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's and it's it really hasn't been done since, you know, that what's that movie? Oh, wait, no, it's End of the Void, but I didn't get to see that in the theater.
Yeah.
I
will say.
Which one? What did you say?
Enter the Void.
Oh, and I still haven't seen that. I know it's been on Netflix forever.
Yeah, it's still there.
Check it out.
But I did get to see. I saw it on the first day, and it was me by myself in my screening room at the theater.
Oh, so hardcore.
So I should have known what I was getting into when every single trailer was scarier than the next, and I don't remember what this trailer was, but it definitely left an impression on me. It was about this. I can't remember the name, but this lady's in this dark room and she's shutting off lights. And when she shuts off the lights, she sees a silhouette of this woman. Oh, is that what it's called?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That looks good.
Then she turns on the light and then there's nobody there. Oh, my God. So that's the trailer that starts right before the movie. And I'm by myself in this theater. Turn on the lights, please. You know. But I didn't realize the film was a Russian film. Like I had seen the music video by the director, but I didn't realize that it was kind of a foreign film. But the first title that came up was not even it was just Versus Brothers is the name of the pictures that it's that was the creator, you know, who created the and it just seemed so I felt like I was watching a bootleg video for a moment. That was the way it came on.
That's awesome.
But I like the experience. The only problem I had is I don't want to take away from it because I think it works the way it is. It's just hard to see it in the movie theater. Like I needed breaks, you know, and occasionally
yeah.
At one point I had to close my eyes and I think I drifted a little bit and I don't know if I was feeling faint or if I just like was tired, but for a few seconds there or a few minutes there I drifted, but it was just because it wasn't like the camera movements were very severe, like even more so where when he's hiding, you know, it's really, really moving. I guess that's to really make you feel like you're the person because you can't really have a smooth glide cam thing happening with that.
Right.
So because of that, there were moments, and I'm not usually affected by this stuff very much, but there were moments where I just had to kind of look away. Like I thought to myself, I'm going to really enjoy this on at home, you know, even though this is cool to see it this way. The gore in it, too, was another surprise. You know, I'm not usually grossed out by gore, but right in the credit sequence, they had this kind of 3D thing where it's like, you know, red over, you know, you're seeing like a 3D model of a body and you're seeing like a knife piercing through the skin and it's just going in and coming out the other side. And And that's just like on the credits, and I'm like, oh my god, what the hell's going on? Like, I was getting like, oh geez.
Get ready.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the camera movements, like you're saying and stuff, and how that could be disorienting, obviously, because it's like, it's for people with motion sickness and stuff. And even if you're not, maybe it's like that feeling you get, like, I was trying to think, like when you're watching somebody else play a video game. And it's like you want to be the controller,
yeah.
but you can't. So you're just like, oh god,
that's
I want to look this
way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like that's what I'm wondering if that's how that's going to be. I mean, kids are used to that now because they just watch other people play video games online. Now that's the thing. It's like they're no longer watching TV shows.
Yeah.
They're watching other people play, so it's like they're used to that lack of control. But I guess for people like us that want to be in control of what we're looking at, you know, it's like maybe that's. Maybe that's probably the barrier that we have to kind of overcome to see something.
It's weird too because I remember when I used to play GoldenEye, my friend John would get so sick watching me play, and I was never affected like that. Like I don't think a small screen ever affects me, but the big screen, I guess, just so much of it for so long, it was getting a little like there's never really a break. There's never a time when this character's just sitting. And just everything's steady. You know what I mean?
Can we just sit down?
Yeah. Let's take a break, guy. Yeah. This, it's just
so
relentless.
Funny. But I really want to see it, but I actually am probably not going to go see it in the theater because I also don't get motion sickness, but I see what is going to happen to me. And I'm like, I want to see this film. And I think that's actually going to probably hurt it in the theaters because I think a lot of us who really are still interested might have their own reservations about being stuck in it, you know? I mean, I do want to see it at home. I want to be able to pause it if I need to, or even just look away, you know what I mean? Like, without having it encompass everything around you, which normally I like. I mean, I like going to the theaters and being immersed and enveloped and no escape, but not in this particular instance.
I don't know how anyone could go see it IMAX. There's no way. I saw it regular. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's no way anybody could make it through. They better put vomit bags or something on the seats.
Oh, no.
Because I saw the trailer. I thought that watching – I forgot what movie I went to see. But maybe it was Batman Superman where they showed hardcore. No, it wasn't that one. It was – what was the movie that came out before Batman Superman that was IMAX? Well, whatever it was, that's –
Maybe Deadpool?
Yeah, Deadpool. That's what it was.
There you go.
That's where I saw the
trailer. Which I got to see and I really liked. I never said anything.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Oh, nice. You got to see most of it, right? Well, maybe not most of it, but you got to see several portions from when you were back at.
I didn't. No, I only got to see.
Oh, you didn't?
I only got to witness, like, when I was. I only got to witness the 2 minute short before that came out, anywhere. That 2 minute thing that they used to pitch. That was, I got to, got to work on the 3D for their pitch part of it. And then when I worked at Blur, there was, we were able to watch that at any time. But no, that was still like a dream, whether or not they were going to actually have it happen. They're still trying to make it happen when I was there, but no, that wasn't, I wasn't a part of that. But yeah, no, I actually got to see it and I was very happy with it. I was happy that it was a good movie. Cause I was, I was on the fence like everybody else. The pre-selling of it was really fun, but can the movie hold up to it? It definitely did. I was really entertained by it. I'm sorry. I didn't derail the conversation.
No, it was good. Good.
I'm dying to see it again.
Well, we
I
want to know.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's
I went and saw it twice. It was good.
Definitely an awesome movie. So, I mean, I didn't like I said when we talked about it, I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. And it's one I still think about. It's now one that you're gonna, the movie that I didn't have any thought about is one now you're gonna compare everything else to at this point. Speaking of.
Well, and sometimes that can help it because you don't have those preconceived, like, oh, this is gonna be so good. So. Mm-hmm. I've learned to really lower my expectations and not in a bad way, I think everything's going to be shit, just if I don't psych myself up like I used to, I'm much happier with my outcomes. Even if I still didn't really, love something, I'm not, crushed that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be,
Yeah, I've kind of do that myself now, because I find even since Star Wars came out on video, I've been, you know, it's been a long time since I've I'll watch a movie and then I'll be like, okay, now it's in the collection, you know, and then I probably never look at it again for a couple of years. But I've been rewatching like Force Awakens, like all, it's one of those now that I just have on in the background sometimes. So it's
just watch that again too. It's really good.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I finally feel like I got. I think I was just in a blur when the movie came out. I didn't know I liked it, but I still kind of didn't feel like it was real yet, or was I wasn't connecting with it entirely. But yeah, but now it's a different story.
Yeah, I know. I just got it myself, and I've been watching it just to, like, you know, just to just have that Star Wars feeling. Just to be in that world again, I love it. And it had been months, you know, it had been since Christmas since I've seen it, so I wanted to see it again for a long time, and it finally came out, and I'm happy to just be in that world again. I just love that whole. JJ just totally knocked it out of the park.
Oh, he definitely did. Yeah,
he should be so proud. I'm like watching, and I'm like, he must be just beaming, like, oh my gosh, I fucking rocked it. This is so great.
Yeah,
you know, or
whatever. But speaking of Star Wars, though, you guys saw the Rogue One trailer?
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh. Whoop. Oh, that looks so good, Donnie Yen. What?
Funky is gonna be something. Yeah,
it's Yen.
They didn't show Benicio del Toro, and my theory is he's Boba Fett, you know, in the movie, which would make sense in a way. But I can't wait. I'm excited.
Why does that make sense?
Because he's brown. I don't know why.
Because he has that same look as what's his name, as that actor.
Oh, is that little kid?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. As that little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like he has that kind of, like I could picture, because in a way he would be a little different looking than the rest of the clones, because he grew up naturally. He wasn't aged at all.
Right.
So he will actually be, he could be a little different. But what I was going to say about the Force Awakens, BB-8 actually, the little robot that I had, he apparently, they did an update. So when you're watching the movie, he actually is reacting to what he's seeing on the screen. And oh my God, Xavier loved watching the movie just to watch BB-8's reactions, because.
Oh, how adorable is that?
He would get sad, like when things were happening he didn't like, he'd turn away from the screen. he'd make some noises, like upset. And it was really funny to watch it like that with BB-8. So
that is cute.
But,
I also watched the Honest trailer for The Force Awakens for the first time, which is probably really old. It probably was a while ago, but have you guys ever seen those?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
That's funny.
But yeah, if anybody hasn't seen the Honest Trailers website, it's really fun, and it just is a loving interpretation where they're poking fun, but we're all fans, so
yeah.
I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, really, I mean, it points out things you don't notice. I don't know if any of you guys watched all the documentaries, but the one thing I never noticed is they're talking about C-3PO's arc in the movie. They said that by the end, in the last shot, he has his gold arm back, and you see it. And if you see the last shot when Rey takes off, he's waving, and he has both gold arms. And in a way, I was kind of disappointed, because I'm like, you know what? I kind of like red arm 3PO. I like the idea that he's self conscious about that, you know.
Right.
So, but it was just weird, yeah. But I've devoured those extras. You know, I kind of wish there was, I kind of miss the days when extras really meant more than just promotional pieces, where people actually, you know, do the full.
They got into the filmmaking, and you know, they have all these freaking storyboards and stuff. They could just put the, like, I used to like watching the storyboards with the movie and stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore. Really wish they would do that again.
Yeah, Blu-ray. They made Blu-rays. They had all these options to, like, the Hulk is the only one. The Ed Norton Hulk is the only disc that took advantage of all of that, because you could watch the storyboards with the movie. Mm-hmm. you can watch panels of comic books that they took inspired from scenes.
I mean, players are connecting to the internet anyway and stuff. It's like, why don't they just, I don't know. I thought that was
the whole point. Yeah. I thought that was what was happening, and we were so excited about getting Blu-rays so that you can have updated content and you can have, you know, all these different interactive capabilities, and instead
you get a new trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
People get lazy.
Current trailers, which, and I also understand that too, because if you've already bought the thing, they're like, how they're going to make more money off of you already having purchased something. So I mean, I get it. It's just sucks. It's just too bad. Did anybody see anything else?
I saw Midnight Special.
Oh, how was that?
I thought it was good. It's
looks good.
It's a different kind of movie. Like, I mean, it's getting a lot of accolades for being like, you know, this, it's like Close Encounters and blah 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 and this and that.
Oh, it's
just a good. I know. It's just a good movie. It's not. It kind of probably throws people for a loop when they see it, especially if they're not expecting a sci-fi movie, because it's not. It doesn't really make it apparent that it is until, you know, somewhat through the movie that there's something odd going on and stuff. And the story is a really slow burn. So if you're expecting like this, you know, super spectacular, you know, craziness, it's not that kind of movie. But there is lots of really great visuals in it. Not just, you know, special effects wise, but just the movie's composed really well. And the storytelling makes you work. So it's like you're actually invested in the characters because of what they're, I don't know, they feel like real people. They're acting like real people. They're not just saying lines. So it's different in that respect, and that's why I guess it's getting some pretty good attention and some good press. But it is slow. It's an hour and a half, and it feels a lot longer than that because it's slow burn.
Just from the trailer, because I haven't seen the film, but just from the trailer, I kept thinking, like, oh, somebody made a good phenomenon. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Do you just remember the old John Travolta movie? But yeah, I was like, oh man, somebody took it and maybe did a better version. Also, that maybe the little kid, we finally know what happened to all of J.J. Abrams' lens flares. He just swallowed all of the unused lens flares that J.J. Abrams is no longer allowed to use.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But it looked like Super 8 to me. Like when I would look at see the trailers, that's what it reminded me of.
At first, I didn't even know.
What's weird is I didn't know I was supposed to take it seriously. Like, I thought it was a direct-to-video movie when I would see commercials for it. And nothing against it. I just didn't know.
It kind of has that vibe. It has a very independent film vibe where it's like, oh, it's on VOD. Let's watch that. You know, it's like one of those kind of feeling movies. And also, it's not a kid's movie. It's not like you could take your kid to it and he'll be entertained by it. It's very dark, and it's very adult.
The trailer looked heavy. It looked like a heavy movie.
It's pretty heavy, but it's good. I mean, it's one of those where if you were to happen to, you know, stumble upon it, you would just be like, wow, that was great. Why did I never hear this movie? You know, it's one of those kind of nice movies. It's not something, you know, I wouldn't say not rush out to it, but you know, it's definitely worth seeing in a theater. It's got great sound and the visuals are pretty nice. Mm-hmm. And like, again, the performances are really good. You're really into it, but again, it is not a blockbuster. It is not like
when you see what's that guy's name, Michael Shannon. That should be like a siren to say, hey, this isn't the movie you thought you were going to see whenever you see him in it.
So he is very very somber, very serious. This whole movie, he's got the same look in his face.
I'm doing a remake of Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. So come see me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I was looking through what was available, and I wanted to do Horror Movie Day yesterday, so I saw The Forest with Marjorie Tyrell, and that was actually really good. I liked it.
Suicide Woods in Japan, is that the one?
Yes, because they're a real thing, and it fascinates me, and I've always been fascinated by places like that. So, I mean, it was really cool. It was definitely exactly what you're expecting. So I wouldn't say it, like, blew any doors off. But if you're just looking for, like, an intense kind of, you know, this chick has a twin sister who gets, apparently, you know, goes into the suicide forest. And she's like, I don't believe, that my sister would commit suicide. So she like goes in after her, like looking for her. So it's very dark, and it's like you don't know what she's just imagining and what she's not imagining. It still has that horror cheesiness where it's like you as the audience, you're like, no, I know what she's imagining, but but it's cool. And it talks about what is it, the Yuri, which are not quite ghosts, but like angry, you know, angry spirits, like kind of evil. And yeah, it's kind of cool. You don't know who you can trust. You don't know if you can trust yourself. And if you're just looking for a fun little horror movie that to get in the mood, horror mood, then I would definitely recommend it on to rent. I also am really excited about Ip Man 3, but that's only available to buy, and I wasn't committed enough to buy it. Yeah, like, I want to rent it because I want to watch it, but I know those. I love those movies, but I don't like go back and rewatch them a whole lot. So
yeah.
I saw the first one. I'm still wanting to see the second one.
Second one's good.
But what's crazy is that, you know, I used to like import all these movies and like, you know, devour them. Now they're everywhere. There's too many for me to be able to check out.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of great stuff on Netflix. And I'm like, I put them all on my list and I'm like, I got to get to that one. I got to get to that one. Whereas I would have devoured it in 2 seconds, you know, if I bought it on DVD from freaking, you know, China or something like that. So
I
did get to check out The Room. No, or not The Room. Room. I guess the one, not the Tommy Wiseau, which I've seen several times and I love.
Oh, the other, the Academy Award nominee.
The one that just came out,
And I have some opinions about it because I really liked the movie a lot. I thought it was great. The story was great. I thought it was, you know, awesome. I thought you said something, Rich, in a past podcast that I wasn't on, but the fact that that kid was criminally freaking ignored for his performance. He made that fucking movie.
Yeah, he was the movie.
He was the movie, and the fact, I mean, they freaking nominated Haley Joel Osment for Sixth Sense, and they didn't nominate this kid for anything where he was that performance. And honestly, although What's-Her-Name was good, I mean, I think she's a little bit she overacts a little bit, and I don't know, I'm not really that big of a fan of her. I think she's all right, but the fact that he wasn't, you know, like, there was nothing about him that was just really... But I mean, otherwise, it was a good movie, and I thought the performances were great. I thought she was really good, but I something about her, she seems like a phony baloney to me. I don't know, something about her.
Wow.
She seems like a phony baloney. You went there.
That was not at all where I thought he was going with the conversation. But it's funny. I one of my favorite parts is the disorienting feeling of being in the real world. When he's out of the room, you know, it's such a weird, because the concept of it is such an odd idea of the fact that this kid doesn't even know there's a world outside of this room, you know, so the whole movie, it was like, I don't know if you felt this way, Dave, like it was really sad, but at the same time, it was a hopeful movie, but oh man, but it was a hard movie to see. I mean, it was brutal.
Because of the emotions behind it, and you know, the like you said, that disorienting feeling of him being out, that was represented really well. Because you know, how do you express that? And it, you know, it's part performance and part you know, the editing and how they just put it all together, the sound dampening and all that shit. They managed to really, really capture that perfectly. You know, the whole movie was leading up to that, to escaping, and it's like it's not going to go the way you think it is. Yeah. You know, somebody else could have, you know, made, you know, a triumphant moment. The kid's like, I'm out. Somebody help me. He was at his weakest. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he wasn't used to that. That was a completely alien surrounding.
And that's not a spoiler for the movie at all. That's almost like the second act of the film. So
that makes me think of The Legend of 1900, where Tim Roth spends his entire life.
On a boat.
And the boat's about to be demolished, and like his friend comes on and is like, come and see the world, you know, do what you need to do. And he's like, I can't, it's a world too big for me, it's a piano with an unlimited amount of keys, you know, like it was so beautiful. I love Tim Roth in that role.
The only thing that was missing was some little girl screaming, he's got land sickness. Remember in Waterworld? When Kevin Costner's like on land for 10 seconds.
I don't remember that.
He can't stay. He's got land sickness. Please. By the way, so Jungle Book came out. It got like 93% Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, no, yeah, I can't wait to see that. That looks beautiful.
Yeah, but then the other movie that unexpectedly got a 93% is Barbershop, The Next Cut. I'm like, really?
All right.
So, yeah, so you got some choices out there.
That's awesome.
And then the other movie that came out that got really good reviews. It's like everything that came out this week got good reviews. The Green Room, starring, I think that's one with Patrick Stewart where he plays, he's, you know, if they remember him, he might get nominated for this because he plays like this diabolical club owner, but he's like a crack addict, crazy person, and he's been getting like phenomenal reviews. But that movie.
Really? I hadn't even heard about that.
Yeah, 93% on that one, too. Is so that's it's supposed to be a really good movie. It's a horror movie, actually. But yeah, so it just came out called The Green Room. So I've been wanting to see it. The trailer looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's like by the guy who did Blue Ruin, which I heard really good things about, which is also on my Amazon list, not Amazon, Netflix list to watch one of these days, and hopefully I'll be able to watch it because I hear good things. It's like very dark, very dark.
Yeah, I've been trying to get through. I have that on the Amazon list. The Tower Records documentary. Have you ever?
Oh, I want to see that too. Yeah.
It's on Netflix.
So I used to work there.
Yeah, although they focus more on the one. It's funny because I used to go to that one in San Francisco and LA, okay. And so I guess because it started there and then it went to the New York one. But the first half that I've gotten through so far has been all about the San Francisco one and LA one. But I'm waiting to see get to the New York one because I even watching the movie I was thinking, wow, I used to love going to Tower Records. Just I remember getting that. Like your mom, Dave, gave me a gift certificate to Tower. That was like I got like Willy Wonka's ticket or something like that. I was like so excited, you know. I mean, to go
in
and
get
an
album. Trek out there. It's like we're gonna go to Tower Records, and it's like, oh wow, it's get to walk with Richie and Tony to all the way down.
You know, it's so funny because I think that feeling is lost on people now. You know, I mean, people who grew up with like, oh my God, you had to take a trip. To this like a magical land. Like I remember Peaches was the one in Florida that was amazing. Yep. And even someplace like Media Play, which has been out of business for years or decades now, you know, it was such an event to go to. I mean, you planned your whole week around this one day and just to be able to peruse the albums and peruse and flip through the books and, look at liner notes that were open and the displays that people would craft from their promotional material, you know? I mean, that was just so...
going down to Virgin down in Orlando.
So raw,
right?
Man.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, and that was like, you know, 15 years ago. It wasn't really that long. Well, for us, not that long ago, but, you know, it's a completely alien time to kids now because... Mm-hmm. They could just press a button and get whatever the hell they wanted. But it's like,
exactly.
If I wanted an album, I'd be reading about an album in a magazine. It's like, oh, God, I gotta go find this album.
And how many things would you find just because of the cover art or something where you're like, oh, I gotta take a gamble? Isn't that how you found Sigur Rós? You know, you're just like, oh, this is it. You know,
this looks weird.
You see something. Yeah, you see something and you make a connection with it. And that's, there's just something that Steve's Old Downtown Music. In Downtown DeLand, that was amazing. Steve's, man, there's so much rich history there that I think people still yearn for because there are still record shops and people want to kind of cultivate that again, but on a broad scale, most kids, you know, don't even know what we're talking about because, like you said, it's all on iTunes, it's all on Amazon, it's all streaming.
Some people who are that much younger than us either because I.
Mm-hmm.
Working at studios, I would get, you know, I would talk about stuff like, I want to go down to Amoeba Records, which is, you know, one of the stores in L.A. That's pretty awesome because it's like,
yeah, it was pretty cool place.
Tower Records and stuff like that. And it was just like, they're like, you want to go to the store and buy something? I'm like, that's the freaking point. You know, you go look around and maybe you'll find something you don't want that you'll
And you have conversations with the people. You listen to what they're listening to. I mean, they would put on things. There's a place, Criminal Records in Atlanta, that is amazing. But, I mean, you have to go into the city. It's a big hassle. You know, I mean, really, even for us, it kind of becomes more about Ease.
Well, that was the other thing, too, that was great about Tower and even Virgin Record Store in the city was that it was not only was a hangout place because they'd have this whole cafe section and they'd have all these, you know, all these music stations. But before iTunes, you know, you'd have to in order to preview an album, you literally had to go to that one of those stations and like listen to it. You couldn't just, you know, you couldn't just hear every single track off an album. You know, before I bought it most of the time, which is which is why also I think is killed album sales too in terms of buying a complete album or listening to an album in the right order, you know, because you don't have to anymore.
And so. I don't know about you guys, but I mean that day, that like outing day was also always where I would go to the comic book shop or the used bookstore. I mean, it would be such an event. And I mean, the more local the better, right? Like it wasn't we were near a mall, but the malls didn't have the stores with the stuff that we wanted, right? So finding the little weird new age shops that had cool books on things that, you know, like would probably
used
be
bookstores,
banned in other places. Yeah. You know, I mean, oh man, there's so much rich history there. And that's, I mean, it's also where I started my love of collectibles and statues. I started collecting dragon statues when I was little, you know what I mean? Like all this different stuff. I mean, there's just this wealth of, I don't know, just, I don't even know how to describe it. It just feels like my whole
there's a texture
is there.
Thing too, because also I still go to Barnes and Noble. Even though I'm probably going to buy the book on Kindle, I will still go to Barnes and Noble to see what came out because I still need that visual thing to see everything around. And Xavier also loves going Barnes and Noble. To him is like a playground because they've got, you know, the big train toys to play with and Legos and then plus he gets to pick out a book and stuff like that. So it's still a fun place to go to. Like that's, you know, on the low end of the commercialized version of what we're talking, you know, because Barnes & Noble, you know, they're limited in what they have sometimes. But
and even, I mean, the other stores that were around, they would do more like things to kind of bring in the community and have events. Like there used to be art events at a place called Enterprise 1701, which has changed locations and looks totally different. But back when it was a little shop, you know, I mean, they had like these awesome things. You would get your magic cards and your D&D stuff, and they also had art books. I got so many different art books there. Chris Achilles and Brian Froud and Michael Whelan. And I mean, all of these beautiful books that have shaped who I am as an artist that I only found while geeking out over people that were like, oh my God, you're a girl who likes X-Men, that's amazing, you know what I mean? Like, or judging me on it, you know, both. So, but I mean, I got to see all that face to face, and I felt like, even though there, you know, as a female nerd going into those things, like, definitely still had to deal with the stigma that, you know, I didn't really like these things, but it was almost like they were quicker to accept me because I was really there. Whereas when you're an online presence, it's so much easier to just like totally discount someone and, you know, you're like, yeah, whatever, you know, but if they're actually there in it with you and you get to meet more people from these events and things, I mean, and exposed to more new things, I don't know. I miss that community sometimes, although I never want to leave my house now, so I'm a victim.
Maybe somebody will invent a virtual way to do that. It's like, you know, they'll recreate the city, you know, recreate my run through, you know, when I was a kid, get out of church, I'd go on a Sunday morning, I was like, all right, time to go to Forbidden Planet and then go to this place to just, you know, make my rounds around the city to all my little spots that I wanted to, you know, just peruse and look at things. Yeah. You could pick up the comic and look at it as opposed to just, you know, looking at the cover online and wondering if you did.
But, yeah, that's what I missed about. I just remember when I used to work at the library. I used to work right where David lived, just in the library section of his house, I guess. And it was right in the village. But what was great is every day for lunch, I would just walk around, like walk down the tower, walk down to Village Comics, walk down all those areas and just discover, you know, go to the used stuff, go to... I made the stupid mistake of walking to Strands, which Dave knows that's like, you know, not even close by. And now I'm like, oh, wow, it's been 2 hours and I've been on lunch. I guess I should get back to work now, you know. But it was easy to get lost in that. And that's how you would find great stuff. You know, I do miss that. But it's also the problem is, too, is like you know, when you live in the suburban areas, it's harder to find that kind of stuff as well, because it's they're either in like strip malls, or, you know, if they're there, like, there's no real area to just kind of walk around to find something. It's like you have to drive there with intention, you know. So
yeah,
discovery's harder that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, sorry about the trip down memory lane. But
yeah, made it sound depressing too. The way we're like,
no,
yeah,
but it's like wistfully good. At least we actually got to experience that. I'm very appreciative.
Yeah. No, me too. Me too. And on that note, not to end on a downer, but it was a better time.
No, it's good. It's okay.
Yeah. No, it's good.
These kids, today have plenty of cool shit.
Yes,
I know. They're doing things that I will never understand, and you know, it's awesome.
It, absolutely. I love hearing. I do not weep for them.
Yes, they get to podcast and do their own thing, so create their own entertainment. So that's the fun part. All right. Well, it was good talking to you guys. I know there's more coming up. I mean, geez, Civil War alone. I mean, I can't believe how quickly that's coming up, you know. So that
I know. I feel like I'm going to blink and it's here. Uncharted 4 is coming up soon, too. Oh, my gosh.
That's right.
So excited.
Yes. I feel like that – was that delayed? Like, because I felt like – I thought that was going to come out.
It's delayed so many times.
Yeah.
It was supposed to come out last
after
year,
Christmas,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kept thinking, oh, we're – and then I saw there's
a
strategy
it's be worth
guide
it.
Out for it. Yeah, but I'm like, how do you create? How do you put a strategy guide out, but you don't release the game?
Well, probably because the strategy guide got delayed, but they didn't delay it again because it went through several delays. The latest of which being just so that they could produce enough copies, I guess. I mean, they physically needed to make sure they had enough because the pre-sales were so good. So, which is awesome. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I don't care. I'm like, it's all good. I've had plenty of other things to keep me occupied, but I'm ready.
Yeah, I want to play. I'm dying to play. So, all right, guys. Well, I'm sure next time we talk, it'll be Civil War Old Town.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.